Gustin's Family Farm Corporation. We refer to them all collectively as the Gustins as we go forward. This is a drainage case in which the Gustins appeal the order of the District Court of Thurston County, which denied the Gustins' request for the imposition of a mandatory injunction against the County of Thurston and an adjoining landowners, Paul Bodlack and his wife Jean Bodlack, from interfering with the flow of the Old Bogan Creek through their property in Thurston County in violation of both the common law and the rest of our statute section 31-224. The Gustins request that you exercise your obligation in this equity case to reassess the record factually and legally to determine whether or not the result should be different than what was determined by the district court. And we acknowledge that, of course, in those areas where credibility may be in conflict, you can take into consideration that the trial court observed witnesses and accepted one version of the facts over the other.
And you would agree that the district court found your client less credible in certain circumstances?
That's what the court found. That's correct. And I don't want to get into the minutiae about that, but I think your statement is correct as far as it goes. I think there are some areas where I don't think the facts are necessarily in dispute, but the inferences from them may be what the court found, but I don't disagree with that statement because it's contained within the order, Your Honor. As it relates to the county, you know from reading the briefs in this particular case what the lay of the land is there.
Can
I refresh your recollection?
We have maps.
There's a drainage watershed of 4,167 acres that is north of the Gustison property. And it comes down and funnels into an area that we're calling the E Avenue Bridge, which is a 20-foot-long wooden bridge that's been there for as long as perhaps anybody knows. That E Avenue Bridge is not only 24 feet long, but that's 140 square feet of area underneath it for water to pass through, and it probably has a 600 cubic feet flow capacity, and that's really what's uncontradicted in the record. Water then comes down, and you can look at the slopes that are shown on Exhibit 399, which is a report of George Bryan on page 11, fairly rapidly as it approaches the E Avenue Bridge. Then after that point, the record is pretty much uncontradicted that the slope is about 1.6 feet per mile. So that's a really, really very gradual slope, almost flat, and it meanders across the Gustison property, across an area called the 12th Road Crossing, which is where 12th Road intersects the Old Bogan Creek Channel, continues on down to the southeasterly direction, then turns to the south towards the Bodlack property. The water, after it leaves the E Avenue Bridge, I should say the channel, picks up an additional 783 acres of drainage between the E Avenue Bridge to the northwest and the 12th Road Crossing. And at the 12th Road Crossing, the county installed sometime, there's no records, no one really knows, the record is, as far as the witnesses' memories, is not really very complete. There's no data in terms of written memoranda or anything else to know exactly when that tube was installed. But we think it's sometime in the 80s, 70s, or 80s, perhaps. But we do know from historical photographs in the exhibits that there was an approximately 24-foot-long bridge at that location before that tube was removed, which would make it at least equal to the span at the E Avenue Bridge and perhaps a little larger. So what we have here is a situation in which the water comes down and turns the corner, comes into the Bodlack property, and picks up additional drainage, and then it hits with a stuff goes through that, what portion of it can move through that, then goes out and it goes down towards the bottom line property. Now, what's important about this 54-inch tube is that, well, the maximum might be 220 cubic feet flow rate per second. I think it's a fair inference from the record that it's probably somewhat less than that, maybe as low as 150. Or maybe up in 180, 190, but be that as it may, at best, it maybe only has about a third of the capacity for flow rate as what the E Avenue Bridge does.
But given that the record indicates that that 54-inch corrugated metal pipe was put in somewhere in the 70s to 80s, what evidence is there in the record of flooding of the nature that your client had in June of 2010?
Well, there really wasn't any, Your Honor, and that's part of what the issue is in this particular case. There's, because it's a complex of factors that are involved in affecting the flow of the corrugated metal pipe, the 54-inch pipe. The Gustafsons did not experience any flooding of any significant nature, period, end of story, before June 10th of 2010. They never filed, and the record is uncontradicted on this issue, a claim against their crop insurance before that flood, because they just didn't have any flooding. Yes, they had water would be out in the field in depressions in certain areas, but nothing that arose to any level that they felt like they needed to file a claim under their crop insurance coverage. So there really was no flooding until June the 10th of 2010. And if you read the record and Roger Gustafson's testimony, and I realize that the court found that he was less credible than other witnesses on some issues, it was essentially uncontradicted what he said as far as his recitation of the historical development of the problem related to the ponding and the rise in the old Logan Creek channel on his property that he suspected was going to ultimately lead to a problem with flooding if it wasn't corrected. And that caused him to go to the Thurston County Board, to go to the Natural Resources District, to approach the Corps of Engineers, his county board supervisor, virtually any of the people he could talk to try and clue them in to the idea that something was going on here, which he suspected was the Bodlax putting more and more fill into their property, raising the level of the channel to the point where it created a damming effect. It was causing that ponding. And so ultimately then, we had the flood in 2010, followed by another flood now that was in the record in 2014. That the testimony was almost exactly identical to the 2010 flood.
Since you mentioned the Corps of Engineers, can you just stop for a minute to talk about the jurisdiction issue raised by the athletes?
Sure.
Do we have a problem?
I don't believe that we do. I mean, first of all, we acceded to the district court's order. We opposed it. The district court entered the order. We complied with it to bring in the Corps of Engineers and all the downstream owners. Then, as predicted, the action was removed to the federal court, and then where sovereign immunity barred the action against the United States was then brought back to the district court where a motion to dismiss was filed and never ruled on by the court.
But, so if the county court did what you asked and imposed a mandatory injunction regarding the change, you have to change the culvert and put in the couple that you had proposed or your client proposed, wouldn't the Corps of Engineers have to approve that?
Yes, possibly. I think they probably would have to approve it.
Would the order have to be subject to their approval?
Not necessarily, but it could. And
who has the final authority over what changes can be made to that old Logan Creek?
I don't know if there's anybody that has a final authority. I think that under the Clean Water Act, the Corps of Engineers has some control over what is placed within the waters of the United States, which this would probably be as a tributary. However, there is, under, I believe it's 404 of the regulations under the Clean Water Act, there's a nationwide ability to put structures in. But our remedy wouldn't necessarily involve putting four 6-foot diameter tubes in. As far as the gustuses are concerned, we can take it all out so that the Logan Creek channel can flow through there. So there would be not any necessary for there would be no necessity for the Corps of Engineers to be involved in that because there wouldn't be any structure in place.
But the concern of the experts on the other side was that it could cause flooding downstream.
Well, there is some concern about it, but no proof, as far as I can tell in the record, that really established that there was going to be anything happen downstream other than the landowners downstream were going to take the amount of water that they would be obligated to take under the common law. If you look at the record, you'll see that all the structures south of G Avenue, 12th Road Crossing, G Avenue, are all greater than the 48 and 54 inch tubes, sometimes 2 to 3 times that size. And the geography is such that we don't believe that the evidence shows that there will be any effect on those downstream landowners at all. And it certainly wasn't shown in the trial of this particular case.
And I want to clarify, oh, sorry, go ahead. I'm just going to clarify. The athletes have suggested that you have limited your appeal with regard to the county to the Road 12 culvert because you didn't actually, in your assignment of error, mention the G Avenue culvert. Would you agree with that, or is your...
I don't agree with that because, I mean, what we're talking about there was, it kind of goes hand in hand. If you chose the 54-inch culvert, I think that the testimony from the engineer for the Bodlax was, is you probably need to put one of equivalent volume
at
G Avenue, just so it would all flow. And by the way, there was a case that I didn't cite in the brief that you might have cited to the trial court you might want to look at. It's called In Neighbors Concerned About Yacht Club Expansion.
Okay.
versus Gross Point, 1999 Westlaw 3365-6445, which deals with this exact argument about whether or not the Corps of Engineers is a necessary party under circumstances where they didn't do anything. They can be called upon as a matter of duty to do something or didn't do something they're supposed to do. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Good afternoon. May it please the court. I'm Charles Campbell. I represent Thurston County, the appellee. Kenan Meyer is here on behalf of the Bird Box, and I understand that Ms. Meyer has ceded to me to present arguments on behalf of the appellees. The Gustafsons, as you know, have the burden of proving each disputed fact necessary to establish their claims. And this case was a very fact-intensive case. It was tried over a six-day period before Jeb Sampson, and he wrote a very detailed order setting out the relevant facts, his findings of fact, his conclusions of law, and his determinations. As a part of his ruling, he had to determine the credibility of witnesses and the accuracy of the evidence that was presented to him, and much of that evidence was disputed. So that was a necessary part of the decision. The credibility of the witnesses, including the experts as well as the Gustafsons and other witnesses, and the court had to resolve that based on its evaluation of the evidence. The court concluded that the Gustafsons simply failed to meet their burden to show that the size of the culvert at the Road 12 crossing was the cause of water backup and damages to their property, and likewise that they failed to prove that any fill that may have been placed in the channel by the boat locks was the cause of flooding damages that they may have experienced.
Did you want to make a finding about de minimis?
Right.
How does that play into, does that not still entitle the pilot shoreline?
Well, I think what you're referring to was testimony by George Bryan, the plaintiff's expert, regarding the effect of fill placed in the channel by the boatlocks, and the court characterized this testimony as having a de minimis effect because Mr. Bryan said that, in his opinion, he thinks that the fill would have a little bit of an effect in causing ponding. So the court characterized that as a de minimis effect. I think the court's concern with that testimony was that he simply failed to establish that the placement of that fill was a cause of permanent and irreparable damage to the Gustafsons, because he couldn't establish to what extent, if any, damage that there was caused to Gustafsons by the placement of that fill. Likewise, there was no evidence that the plaintiffs presented to show that any damage was caused to their land by the installation of the culvert. And to respond to one of the questions earlier, at trial, the plaintiffs really focused on the Road 12 crossing culvert. There really wasn't much emphasis by the plaintiffs on the G Avenue crossing, and they don't discuss that in the brief either. The focus has really been the Road 12 crossing at all times.
Mr. Campbell, can you answer my earlier question about if the court would have entered an injunction and required a change to the culvert at either of those locations? Would the Corps of Engineers have to be involved?
Well, they do have jurisdiction, so that's a problematic concern that's existed from the outset in this case, and it's the reason why we requested that they be noticed in on the case. What effect a court order would have on the Corps of Engineers, I think we can only speculate. I think we would assume that the Corps of Engineers would try and accommodate the court order, but we don't know. They may take an independent view of what is necessary to be done here. We do know that they have approved the installation of the culvert that occurred in 2011 when that plan was submitted to them and authorized a permit for that. And
that, that was just to replace the 54-inch with another
right.
That was anchored.
Right. So that's been their involvement, really, up to this point.
Could the court have entered an order subject to the approval of the Corps of Engineers?
That would be a conditional order.
So that would be problematic.
That would be.
Yeah.
And I think that's what the concern that the court has.
Is there any other procedure for, I mean, the county has a vested interest in this to
right.
help manage the flow of water through our properties. Are there other procedures, other remedies available to landowners besides this particular statute or the common law?
Well, Mr. Mock has cited the statute that I would submit does not apply to a county who maintains a road crossing. The statute that requires landowners clear ditches that run through their property once a year. So certainly that statute may apply, may or may not apply with them versus the roadblocks. I really don't have an opinion on that. They have come before the county board, and I think they've gone about this the right way. They've tried to get the county to take steps to facilitate their concerns. The problem the county has been put in is really put in the middle between the Gustafsons and downstream properties, Bodocks and folks further downstream. If they,
the county should have final say.
Well,
right?
it does.
And so, for example, did the Bodocks have to get permission from the county to contour the banks of the channel?
No, really, the Bodocks did not. They did that on their own. Arguably, if anyone had jurisdiction over the channel, it would have been the Corps of Engineers. And the Corps of Engineers has, over time, gotten involved with the Bodocks over that. That really was not a county matter. The county controls the crossing. Really, that's all that the county controls. I'd like to briefly comment on two of the areas where the plaintiffs failed to establish the claim of causation. That's really what this case came down to. Could they establish causation? And they simply failed to meet their burden of showing causation. The evidence showed that, as you commented on earlier, this culvert had been in effect since it was installed sometime in the 70s, is when the evidence showed it was installed. So it had been in place for more than 30 years by the time Roger Gustafson said they first had any flooding damages on their property. We know that there had been similar rainfall Jackson acknowledged that. The expert testimony showed that there had been similar rainfall events, and yet this is the only one that he claims caused flooding damages on the property. Obviously, the culvert itself could not have caused that if, in fact, there had been similar rainfall events in the past and no flooding damages. Also, when this culvert was replaced in the fall of 2011, the crossing was wide open. The culvert was removed. The crossing was wide open for a three-month period. During that time, Roger Gustafson, one of the neighbors, Mike Anderson, testified that water was backed upstream of the Road 12 crossing. This is when there was no culvert in place at all. So obviously, the culvert cannot be attributed as the cause of water backup, because that situation occurred when there was no culvert in place. In addition,
and the land at issue really where the flooding primarily occurred is a floodplain.
It's in a floodplain, and as Mr. Mock accurately represented, the land is relatively flat. The channel itself is flat and meandering. It's an inefficient drainage way. It was never designed to transport large water flows. That's why the dredge was put in nearly 100 years ago to facilitate drainage through the area. And the other situation that has occurred over time is that this channel has changed its course. As the lands have become farmed, farmers have filled in areas, loops in the channel that previously existed. Those have now become low-lying areas where water tends to pool and pond. There's an aerial photograph, I believe it's Exhibit 340, that was taken by the Nebraska State Patrol at the time of this flooding in June of 2010 that shows extensive flooding in this area where water has ponded in these low-lying areas where the channel used to flow but no longer does in fields that are now being farmed. So all of those factors come into play. The evidence showed that this situation had been the existing condition that had been in existence for more than 30 years. All the farmers in the area relied upon the existence of the crossing and structures as they existed. The testimony from Brian McDonald and Tom Riley, two of the expert witnesses, was that if the culvert were to be increased in size, this would cause flooding to downstream properties. George Bryan testified that that may very well occur, but his justification was that it would give those downstream properties the same amount of water that they previously had before the bridge was replaced. The problem with that, there are several problems with that. First of all, that had become the established condition that has now existed for more than 40 years that the property owners were entitled to rely upon. Secondly, Mr. Bryan was only recommending that changes be made to restore the area to a condition of nature to the extent that those would benefit the Gustafsons. He wasn't recommending that the channel be restored to the location that previously existed where it cut through Gustafson's fields, that they were now farming and those channels no longer existed. He wasn't recommending that we eliminate irrigated crops and pivots that are now occurring that didn't previously exist.
But he recommended that the Bodlatch property where that channel is, that it be dug up?
He did, yes. In summary, I would submit
that it's consistent, isn't it, with the court's finding that the Bodlatch did deposit some of the soil when they were contouring the channel. If they deposit some of that soil into the channel itself, elevating the base of it.
Yes, the court made that finding, and Mr. Bodlatch himself acknowledged that. So I don't think there was really any dispute that he had placed fill into the channel. The issue was, what, if any, impact did that have?
And the best, my recollection is the best that Mr. Gustafson, attorney, or excuse me, expert, could do is to say the combination of the
right.
Road 12 culvert and the elevation by the Bodlatch property
extensive rainfall that occurred over that particular period of time. He didn't take into account soil saturation, water table levels, soil characteristics.
So these were some deficiencies which the court kind of noted as...
Noted as problems in the court finding causation.
Right.
Yeah. In summary, I'd submit the district court correctly found that the assistants failed to establish entitlement to a mandatory injunction. They failed to show permanent and irreparable